Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.
Hey, where are you, Bob?
Welcome into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5, the game here on a Wednesday edition of the show. Nick Braden, D-Mace, and Marquise. Boys, happy hump day.
We should take all of our pre-show conversations and commercial breaks.
Put them on a podcast.
Put them on a podcast and then put them behind a paywall and then put a rating on it.
Explicit. Man, it would be so awesome. Calipari is the greatest coach ever.
Oh, you got it in there early.
It'd be awesome.
Jesus.
Wow. I know. Oh, man.
Not a good night, Nick, for you, buddy.
Yeah. No.
Or
no.
For you.
No, it wasn't.
Duke was good, and Sparty was not.
My boy, though, that I was talking up yesterday, Trey Jones, pretty big down the stretch last night.
But he was not the best player.
No.
That Maxie kid for Kentucky.
Oh, yeah.
Holy smokes.
Yeah.
Freshman, first time ever guarding against number one?
Yeah. No, Kentucky's got better athletes. There's no question about that.
That's the kid they said is the one and done.
Yeah, I'm not suggesting Trey Jones is, like, the best player or whatever. I just am pointing out
good,
that
though.
He's very good. And, oh, by the way, he's back. I feel like people don't know that he was back. And that bounce pass he had outside the three-point arc.
Yeah.
Oh, my God. What do you have, like 15, 6, and 6 with a couple steals? Like he's a hell of a player, man.
Is Kansas a disgrace for the amount of turnovers they had last night? Kansas had, I think, at least 24 turnovers. Like, when I was watching that game, I'm like, if Kansas doesn't turn the ball over, they should be beating Duke by double digits.
Well, yeah, they lost by, what, 2 points, 1 point?
Yeah, it was very, very close.
You look at these teams, and they shouldn't have a ranking at the beginning of the season, because like the first 10 games of the season, it's like, you know, some team, because you're always, especially because you're always going to have, which I love that the NCAA does, is that they have the top ranked teams play each other. And
I don't think that's NCAA. I think that's TV.
Yeah, well, TV. But what I'm saying is these universities are scheduling it, like, you know, Calipari.
Oh, of course.
Or Izzo. Or, you know, Krzyzewski, they schedule these teams.
Do you think they're doing that out of the kindness of their heart, or do you think they're collecting a large paycheck?
Oh, they're collecting a large paycheck. But I like Izzo's philosophy, and he said this years ago. Like, he would rather play those tough teams early because he knows the Big Ten is tough. I want to see where my team is at. And I'm pretty sure Calipari does the same thing, and Krzyzewski and some of these, you know, really good coaches. They want to see where their team is at early, so once they get into conference play, it gets tough.
And that is because, watch this, boys, results in college basketball don't necessarily matter early in the year. Results in college football absolutely matter. If you just win by a point, even if you just beat North Carolina by a point on a two-point conversion defense, or if you beat Iowa by 5 points, or if you... You know, you lose to Kansas State. Like, results matter. One result matters. A missed field goal for Georgia changes the rankings last night. So the results don't matter as much in college basketball because it's all about, like you said, Derek, testing your team early to make sure they're prepared for March or conference schedules at least, because those still results do matter. But, you know, the rankings coming out last night, the results clearly are important. Otherwise, Oklahoma would be sitting there at 4 or 5. Now they're down at 9 or 10, and the Big 12 might be out of the playoff based on what we saw last night.
Mm-hmm.
So your thoughts, your first reaction, Ohio State 1, LSU 2, Bama 3, Penn State 4, and then the guys on the outside looking in was what?
Clemson 5, Georgia 6. I think the two biggest, you know, first reaction. Number one for me is, if I'm Dabo Sweeney, I am the happiest dude on the planet.
Mm-hmm.
I am the happiest dude on the planet. If I'm Dabo Sweeney, I could not be happier. I think Reese Davis said it last night. Could not. The most excited guy to see Clemson pop up at 5 is Dabo Sweeney. Because he's going to take that and he's going to plaster it all over the facility and say, look at this, boys. 25, 26 straight. You're winning by 35 points a game. You got the best player in America. nobody trusts you. Nobody believes in you. And that he's the happiest guy on the planet. So that was my first reaction. Number two, I have a little bit more question, a few more questions about if Alabama can lose to LSU and still get in. I still think that's a conversation worth having. And then number three, the Big 12 looks like they're behind almost everybody. If Georgia's a one-loss champion, they're not going to fall behind Oklahoma. If Oregon or Utah win out and win the Pac-12 championship at 12-1, I'm not sure they're going to fall behind Oklahoma. If a one-loss Penn State or Ohio State is sitting there, or a one-loss LSU or Alabama is sitting there, I don't know if they fall behind Oklahoma. So the Big 12 might be boxed out of all this. Based on what we've seen last night, their schedule is going to get tougher, and they're going to get better wins because they still have Iowa State and, you know, Baylor on the road. Like, there's still a couple of marquee wins for Oklahoma, but I don't know if that last night felt like a pretty bad night for the Big 12.
Well, if Baylor's the team that sort of, you know, it's bad for them because no matter what, if Clemson, Ohio State, LSU, Alabama, even if they all lose one game, I don't see how Baylor jumps up, you know, above all those teams. Ohio State beat Penn State, say LSU beat Alabama, Clemson continues to win, because to me Baylor is so low, they would have to beat Texas twice.
Or Oklahoma twice. And they still play Texas.
Exactly. And in order to even, you know, think about cracking the top four.
Yeah.
They're in a bad position being so low at number 10. I'm surprised that they're at 12. I really am.
Well, they have played an awful non-conference schedule. They've got a nice win over Kansas State. And that's about it. Like, look at the wins for a lot of these teams. Who's Oklahoma's best win? Texas?
Yeah.
And that's a three-loss team at this point?
Not ranked.
Right.
Who's Baylor's best win? Who's Minnesota's best win? Who's Utah's best win? Who's Oregon's best win? Who's Oklahoma?
No, you're right.
Not, like, at Washington?
Well, Utah lost to USC.
Now USC's better than people think, and it was on the road at the Coliseum where they're really good. I don't think it was a close game on a Friday night. Like, I don't think that's a terrible loss. It's not even close to as bad as South Carolina or Kansas State as far as how you lost to Kansas State and the badness of the South Carolina team. But who are these teams? Who's Alabama's best win? At A&M? Okay, that's not bad. But that's not that much better than, like, what these other teams are bringing to the table.
Sure.
Like, Oregon and Utah's best win they both went up to Washington and won. That's probably the best win for both of them.
I'm looking at this, and the committee probably would never come out. They would never say it. But I think the reason that they chose to put Penn State at four, they don't believe Penn State's going to be Ohio State. They believe Penn State is going to lose and be out anyway. Why? Because my thing is, you put Clemson at five. Clemson has blown everybody out except North Carolina.
Clemson will be undefeated, and they're going to be in the playoff regardless.
Exactly. And then Penn State has had some close games, period. They've had close games.
But better wins.
Yeah, but better wins.
Slightly.
But you put them ahead of Clemson. My thought is they know, they don't believe that Penn State can beat Ohio State. So they know eventually, once the rankings come back again after the game, after Penn State and Ohio State play, Clemson will jump them, and Penn State will drop to eight.
Well, and they'll feel justified this
exactly.
week if they beat Minnesota.
Yeah.
If Penn State goes on the road and beats undefeated Minnesota, who checked in at, like, what, 17 or
17.
Something? Yeah, I mean, which is very low for that team.
Polls had them at 13.
For undefeated. And I'm okay with it. Minnesota barely beat a bunch of bad teams early in the year. Like, talk about eye test or domination. Like, now they are dominating teams now, but they're dominating, like, Maryland and, you know, like, they're not beating a bunch of great Rutgers and, like, their schedule's atrocious. They did wax Nebraska, but Nebraska's a team that's under 500 right now. So I just think what they're doing is they're covering their – if they beat Minnesota, they don't have to justify the jump, right? Mm-hmm. Like, they put them in there, and if Penn State beats Minnesota, then they'll feel justified at putting Penn State at number four because then they'll have another quality win that's quality, but, like, is beating Pittsburgh 18-10 a super really good win or just sort of like a good win?
Yeah.
It's a good win. It's nothing great, though. Scoring 18 points on Pittsburgh is not a reason that you belong amongst Alabamas and Clemsons of the world. You know, like, beating Iowa 17-12 on the road is a really good win.
Well, I ticked off Penn State fans last night on Twitter. I said that Clemson would beat Penn State by 17 points on a neutral field.
Yes.
I think so.
So, again, I saw that and I was like, that's ridiculous. Clemson's the better team. But who cares, number one, because they're all – like, right now, 1-4, like, look at the matchups in the playoff if it started today. What are the matchups? Ohio State and Penn State, 1 versus 4, and LSU Bama 2-3. They're both going to happen. Both those games are literally going to happen in the next 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
So who cares, first of all? but again, if I'm Dabo Swinney, I'm like, hell yeah. Put us on the Roy bus, man.
Boy,
Kick us out of the top four. We've only won 26 straight by 35 points a game with the best player in America. No big deal. Just leave us out of the playoff.
You know who I feel bad for? Is NC State.
Oh, yeah.
This week, NC State is at home against Clemson. NC State's a 32.5 point underdog at home to Clemson. Clemson's going to come in disrespected, not being in the playoff. Mm-hmm. I'm telling you right now, listen to me.
Weigh the points.
Listen to me right now. If you've ever listened to me for one thing, just listen for this. Find your bookie and bet Clemson for everything you own. They will win by 50, and they will destroy NC State to stick it right up the committee's keister.
So, since the one-point game against North Carolina, I mean, they basically dominated Texas A&M, 24-3 until A&M had the late cover in the back door there in, like, the final minute. Since the one-point loss, by the way, North Carolina is not a terrible team also, by the way. They're much improved. Great true freshman quarterback, Sam Howell. If you like watching quarterbacks, he is going to be an NFL draft pick. They beat Florida State, who I think is what they. I know they just fired their coach,
they're right around
500.
Yeah,
nothing special. But they beat him by 31 points. Louisville is a winning record team on the road, beat him by 35 points. Boston College has got a winning record in the ACC. Again, none of these teams are great. Beat him 59-7. These teams are comparable with the best wins for all the other teams, right? Oklahoma and Oregon and Utah, and you know, you get on the list. That's what makes Georgia interesting. They have one of the worst losses, but they have two top 15 wins. That's what makes Georgia interesting, is they've beaten Notre Dame and Florida and basically dominated both of them on defense.
Well, the two teams that to me, that's why when we did our rankings yesterday, I ranked Florida and Georgia higher. Regardless of their loss, because I look at their strength of schedule, I look at who they've played. And Georgia, like you said, Georgia and LSU, they both have played a tough schedule. And
yeah,
Georgia with the blimp, you know, with the little, you know, scuff they had against South Carolina. I mean, this is a team that, you know, based on their schedule, they are a top four team, you know. Yeah. To me, Georgia's a top four team to me. Even though I didn't put them, I think I had them 5, right outside
that's
my top four.
That's
yeah,
where I've got them.
I still think that they have a shot. If they run the table, they still have a shot at making the playoffs.
Look who they're going to play. They're going to play Auburn, A&M, and then either LSU or Bama.
Yeah,
like they're going to win their way in if they win out. What does that do to the other teams in the SEC? That's a totally different discussion altogether. I just think there's a huge difference, and I think we've evolved as college football as an entity. There's a 0 and the 1 in the loss column is not that big a deal. The difference between those two things is not that big a deal. Everybody plays either down to a competition or has one game where they mess up. If you lose twice, though, you're just not one of the best four teams, and that's just sort of where it's at. Like, once is an anomaly. You can explain it away. It happens to everybody, right? Clemson's North Carolina, Georgia's South Carolina. You know, Oklahoma went to Kansas State and laid a total egg. Like, everyone has those one games. But once you do it twice, then it's a trend. And then I think there's a huge difference between 1 and 2 in the loss column and a 0 and a 1, if that makes any sense.
Here's what we got coming up on the show today. Tim Brando is going to join us to kick off the second hour from Fox Sports. We've got Derek Mason, Vanderbilt head coach, also a D-Mace dissection today. You going to dissect Derek Mason? Is that your all 22?
I think he's still in the laboratory.
I think I'm in the laboratory. My computer went bonkers yesterday.
Also, we
have to push it back to tomorrow.
Dude, all the sponsors are going to be pissed.
Yeah, my lab, man. I mean, I had a little fire in the lab yesterday.
You got a little rust on the scalpel.
Yeah, one of the techs was messing around and spilled something, you know, on the computer while I was in the back working.
He's like that fat guy from Jurassic Park.
Yeah, he just, I don't know what he was trying to do.
He's trying to.
But he ended up, you know, I think he was drinking a Coke and
trying to steal that dino DNA.
And he knocked over his Coke into the machine, man. And I came running out, and I'm like, what are you doing?
He's got ink on his face. Like,
yeah,
what's going
it's just
on?
Like, so.
Do you realize what you just done?
So, yeah.
All right, so we got Brando, we got Derek Mason. We have no dissection today. Sean Henry's going to join us from the Predators, Adam Vingan. A lot to get to here this morning. It is Morning Drive. We are live from the Wholesaling Studio, powered by RumbleOn.com. When we come back, one man believes that Tua will not be the better quarterback in the NFL, and his counterpart will be. He works at this very own radio station. He's next on Morning Drive.
From what I've seen, and I haven't seen every game, I mean, the one that looks the most NFL-ready that I've seen a bunch is probably Burrow. And yet, you know, there's a lot of discussion about that. Tua, you know, you have to love Tua for what he's done, and yet, you know, those injuries are a concern. And you don't want a guy that's going to come into the league. I mean, you know, he's struggling to stay healthy there. And you know, probably will end up with a team that won't have as good a protection as what he had in college. So, you know, where does that end up? You know, Herbert, the guy at Oregon, I mean, he looks like the real deal. But, again, I haven't seen, you know, I've seen probably bits and pieces of three games. So I don't know. You know, it's still wide open. There's a lot to do. I'll tell you, if in fact they head in that direction, there will be so much scrutiny and so much time spent on those guys that, I mean, you'll know more about them than you want to know.
That was Floyd Reese yesterday here on Morning Drive discussing the college football quarterbacks. And obviously we're going to see Tua and Joe Burrow coming up on Saturday in Tuscaloosa. Obviously, the Titans will be in the market for quarterback. We know in all likelihood Tua is going to be well without of reach.
Oh, I totally disagree.
You think the Titans could trade up to...
I think all of them are in reach.
No, I disagree with that. What
happens if the Titans finish... And I'm not trying to derail your intro here, but like, what happens if the Titans are picking 17th and all these guys are on the board at 8? Like, that's not that far-fetched. That could happen.
But you think John Robinson would give up all of his picks and all of his assets when they need offensive line help and defensive line help?
I hope that any organization, any front office man or woman who thinks that they have found the answer for 15 years at quarterback would spend anything it takes to get that.
Oh, yeah, same here. I hope.
I don't care. Give up how many picks you need. If you think, I mean, you know, right, within reasonable, you know, prices here. If somebody's saying, "Hey, give us like 5 first-round picks," okay, no, I'm not giving you. Unless for Trevor Lawrence, then you can have like my firstborn child, my secondborn child. You can have the dog if you want, and the deed to my house. I want Trevor Lawrence, but I don't think it's out of the question that the Titans finish, you know, 7-9, and are picking at 12 or 13 or 14, somewhere in that range, and that there's 5 or 6 good quarterbacks on the board at 5. Or 6 or 7, and that they have to pick their guy, but it has to be the guy. That's
right.
That's
but if
the
it
issue.
Was, if
it better it, be Patrick Mahomes or whatever else. You better believe in him so much that it's worth it.
If we're looking at the Bengals basically winless, we're looking at the Jets with one loss or one win, the Redskins with one win. I don't think the Jets would. I mean, they got Sam Darnold, even though he's regressing.
And the Redskins used the first round pick last year,
right?
So those two aren't. The Dolphins and the Bengals will probably take quarterbacks unless the Dolphins are trying to get Trevor right next year. You know, I'm just saying, like, again, Deshaun Watson went 10th. He had the ACL problem. You know, Mahomes went 12th, I think, or maybe vice versa. The point is that those guys, you know, we've documented where Derek Carr was drafted, Russell Wilson, Drew Brees, Tom Brady, Dak Prescott. Like, there's, you can get quarterbacks. So I don't think you necessarily have to mortgage the future to go get a guy, but if there is a guy that you believe in,
right,
trade the picks. Go get the guy you want.
But here's where I disagree with Floyd with Burrow. Like, if you believe Joe Burrow is a better quarterback than Tua, just a flat-out better NFL prospect, that's fine. But to me, I think it's flawed logic to go with Joe Burrow over Tua because of what Floyd alluded to, and that is the health. Like, would you draft Joe Burrow instead of Tua? Let's just say hypothetically you're the first pick. You loved them both. Would you take Burrow over Tua simply because Tua has been more, quote, injury prone?
If they both were equal, yeah, I would.
Okay.
If
they, do you view them both equally?
I'm saying if they both were equal. I think, and this is just me, I think Joe Burrow is the better NFL quarterback. Not to say that Tua is not going to be good. I think Tua is going to be good. But I think Joe Burrow, they're both going to struggle because they're both going to go to horrible teams. Unless, you know, the Titans can move up or one of these teams that are okay can move up to that spot where they can get one of these quarterbacks. But if they don't, then no matter where these two guys are drafted, they're going to go to bad teams, and they're going to struggle right away. So I understand what Floyd is saying. If they both are equal, then who do I take? Well, if I'm a bad team, I'm taking the guy that's been more healthy,
and
that's Joe Burrow.
And who's 6'4", 220.
Exactly. And it's no knock on Tua. I still think Tua's going to be a good quarterback. But based upon my condition, meaning my offensive line's probably not that good or whatnot, I'm taking a guy that has been healthy throughout college, not a guy that has had, you know, three injuries back to back that has put him out of multiple games. Not to say that his ability to play the game is any less. It's just, you know, the history factor. You know, history factor comes, the injury factor comes in. If he's been injured more times than not, and I have both of these quarterbacks on sort of the same pedestal, then I'm going with the guy that's a little bit more healthy. Now, this is what's going to make it very interesting, because all these quarterbacks that are coming out are around 23 years old. Teddy Bridgewater is only 26 years old.
Is that all he is?
Yeah, he's 26. Yeah, he's 26 years old. He's going to be like a number one pick. So when you look at Cincinnati, when you look at Miami, do they want to go with a guy that's still in his 20s, mid-20s?
He turns 27 in like 3 days.
Yeah, 27. A guy that's in 27, you figure I could still get 10 years out of him. If he stays healthy, I can get 10 years, probably more than that.
But he's more injury prone than Tua is.
But if I protect him.
I just don't think he's got the upside. For that amount of money?
Well, the guy's good.
No, I agree. If
I'm one of these teams.
He's 27-7 against the spread as a quarterback. He's great. He's not good. He's great.
But if I'm one of these teams like Cincinnati and just really Cincinnati, because I think Cincinnati, they have talent. I just don't think they have the quarterback. If they can get somebody like Teddy Bridgewater, that puts them out the market for a quarterback.
Well, they also just drafted Finley last year.
Yeah, he's not the answer. I think Teddy Bridgewater,
he will come into play with some of these top teams that need a quarterback.
I think the strategy of drafting like if you told me I can draft Chase Young, try to get Lawrence next year, and have Teddy Bridgewater on a 2-year deal, that's a hell of an equation. I would take that in 2 seconds. So the question is he charging Nick Foles money? Is that expensive for a quarterback? Is that inexpensive for a quarterback?
He's going to get at least 25,
like
in between 25 and 27 million.
Is that just because that's what the dollar figure is? Because I don't think, again, I think Teddy Bridgewater's a good player. I think he's been fortunate to be in good situations.
He can't get the ball down the field.
He is not an elite passer, but he's a good quarterback. So I like having that guy. I just don't think it's like Nick Foles. I don't think they're worth $22 or $25 million. Maybe that's just the going rate. Let me ask you something about Burrow, though, Derek, because I think this is both a positive and a negative. The idea that it has just sort of come out of nowhere, right? Like, I think one of the interesting things comparing Tua to Joe Burrow is Joe Burrow is making tougher throws. Mm-hmm. Like, Tua is just, and this is also a problem with Trevor Lawrence, Tua has so much faith in the system and his receivers that he doesn't have to make a lot of great, difficult NFL throws. Joe Burrow is making, even though the receivers are great, he's making a lot of really tough throws. He's played against really tough defenses, Auburn, Florida, and made really tough throws into tight windows so far, and that's been very impressive. How much of it is this Johnny-come-lately, just this one-year flash because Joe Brady stepped in and helped the offense? Is that a concern, or is that a positive because it's an NFL coach with an NFL system, and he's showing that he can run the NFL style? It can kind of go both directions.
Well, I think because of what he did last year, everybody saw Joe Burrow last year, and they said, this guy's a good quarterback. He's not going to make any mistakes. He's going to do exactly what you want him to do. And if LSU can just elevate their play calling, you think he would be better. And, well, they elevated their play calling, and he's much better. I think that works in his favor because he showed, even in a system that didn't allow him to throw the ball much, he was able to protect the football and make really good decisions. And then when you put him in a system that allows him to throw the ball even more, he just expands his play. He doesn't make bad mistakes, and he throws touchdowns, and he does what's necessary of a quarterback. After that Auburn game, I said, the Florida game, I thought, okay, this guy's he's good. But then after that Auburn game,
I said this guy's legit.
Yeah. He is legit because he did what he did against Auburn that last drive showed me that he was basically above everyone else on it. He was the best player on the field. He showed that he was the best player on the, because that drive, it never seemed like he panicked. Not once did it seem like he panicked in that drive. It was like an NFL drive. 2 minutes left in the, like a minute and 30 seconds left in the game, and just methodically moving the ball down the field.
Let me bring up a third player here, because the top three are largely two of Joe Burrow and Justin Herbert.
Uh-huh.
The Jalen Hurts and Jake Fromm, there's a couple other really good options, but they're more down the first round, like later in the first round. So those are guys the Titans could actually target and probably not have to trade up to get. But Justin Herbert, I don't know what you guys think about this. I think you could argue the last three games, they dominated Southern Cal, they beat Washington State on a come-from-behind, you know, last-minute drive, and they beat Washington. He wasn't the better quarterback on the field. I'm not sure he was the better quarterback in any of those three games. Anthony Gordon for Washington State, Jacob Eason for Washington, and Keaton Slovis, a true freshman for USC. You could argue all played better football than Justin Herbert, but in the fourth quarter, in the critical drive, when the Ducks needed a drive to win the game, Justin Herbert delivered a drive. So what do you make of that? Because I am not as sold on Justin Herbert, not because he went to Oregon, but because I just don't buy the prospect. He's not necessarily putting up the elite numbers, but then he's really clutch in the fourth quarter. So there's something to consider there with Justin Herbert.
615-737-1025, the number if you would like to jump in. Good 30 minutes there on college football, the playoff rankings, as well as Tua versus Burrow, and also all the other quarterbacks that are certainly going to be potentially available for John Robinson and the Tennessee Titans. 737-1025. I was thinking about this yesterday. I've got the perfect game plan. Now, I don't know if it can be executed. That's a completely different story. But if Arthur Smith doesn't at least attempt this, I think the jury is out on Arthur Smith. The verdict is in. Back after this on Morning Drive. 6:34, welcome back into Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5. The game, we're going to get to Arthur Smith and the Tennessee Titans coming up in just one moment. But let's get a quick college football call in here. Zach wants to check in on the college football rankings from last night. Zach, you're first up today on Morning Drive. What's up, Zach?
Hey, how are y'all?
Good.
So this is more about, I guess, Tua and versus Burrow, but
okay.
The rankings were about what I expected last night, to be honest with you, and you know that all worked itself out in the end. But as far as the Titans, if they were going to draft one of those two, I would just prefer it to be Burrow, as I believe it was Derek said, with that injury history, both ankles now with Tua really scares me. And Tua is great, but I feel like it's something that's overlooked. I feel like his stats are kind of inflated, because his receivers get a lot of yards after catch, and that makes it look a lot better than what it actually is. I'm not saying he's bad, but, you know, that makes sense.
Yeah, no, those little 7-yard RPO slants turn into 75-yard house calls.
It could be, and that's the same thing that people are now seeing. People started to see with Marcus Mariota that I pointed out a long time ago. A lot of his yardage was after the catch. These guys were catching screen passes, hitches, slants, and then taking it 80 yards. I'm not saying – I hope that Tua doesn't fall into that category where he gets in the NFL, he's a good quarterback, but then you start to see the flaws in his game because he can't make certain throws. I'm telling you, they're going to pick him apart. They're going to pick both of the quarterbacks apart, but I think they're going to really pick Tua apart.
Oh, they're all
in the draft.
Yeah.
I think they're really going to pick him apart in the draft because they're going to look at it.
There's a lot of science.
And say, well, you've only really, you know, you've only really thrown these plays, and then your receivers have been completely wide open. You've never made really consistently a tough throw. Mm-hmm. And then they're going to look at Burrow, and they're going to say, well, he's made a lot of tough throws. I think they're both really good quarterbacks. I think both of them will struggle in the NFL because they're going to go to bad teams. But if I had my pick, if both guys are equal, I am taking Burrow because of the injury history with Tua. Nothing else but the injury history.
Yeah, and let's track the pedigree on Burrow for a second because it does feel like he just kind of came out of nowhere, right?
But he hasn't.
But that's the thing. He's a 4-star recruit who's a big-time player who went to Ohio State. And getting even though Colin Cowherd doesn't know that. He signed with Urban Meyer at Ohio State, and not being as good as Dwayne Haskins in college is not really a knock. Mm-hmm. Dwayne Haskins was exceptional in college, first-round draft pick. So he transfers to LSU. It's sort of like Jalen Hurts. Like, people rip on Hurts. It's like, not being as good as Tua is not is like 99.9% of all quarterbacks in college football. You're not going to beat out Tua. It's the same thing with Fields and Fromm, right? Like, Fromm's pretty good. That's why Fields transferred. So not being as good as Dwayne Haskins is not a big knock on a four-star recruit who went to Ohio State, who then transferred to LSU, and with one of the most archaic offenses in history, he goes 15 touchdowns, two picks, wins 9 or 10 games in his first year as a starter. What separates him from a lot of people, not Tua, but the entire locker room is in love with the guy. Like, his teammates have – there's a Baker Mayfield level of admiration and respect that Joe Burrow just – some people are just very likable, right? And he just automatically just steps into a locker room and wins people over. And now what did I say all summer long? Well, he's unspectacular, but he wins games. Well, now not only is he winning games, but he's spectacular too. Like, he's mm-hmm. making the big plays because now he's got an NFL coordinator calling his plays and designing his offense. So I think he's shown that he belongs in this conversation. 6'4", 6'3", 215, 220, big arm. He's making all the throws. He's an excellent athlete. He'll run the ball if he needs to. He's shown – I mean, listen, he's got a chance to show the world what he's all about on Saturday.
So speaking of designing an offense, thinking about this yesterday, right? You go back to October the 6th, Sunday Night Football on NBC. The Colts defeated the Chiefs 19-13. If Arthur Smith has a brain cell within his head, he's going to look at that tape. Now, I get it. The Colts' offensive line is probably the best in football, if not their second behind the Dallas Cowboys. Titans' offensive line is trash. But Patrick Mahomes coming back from injury this week, you know, maybe not at 100%. Titans have a really good defense. I don't think this game gets out of hand on Sunday. And by the way, when the Colts played the Chiefs, the Colts had four starters out on defense and still held Mahomes to 13 points.
Why, Nick?
I don't know. Why?
Why do you ask? No, I'm setting you up here because you're about to tell us why.
Well, Jacoby Brissett threw 29 times in that game. Marlon Mack ran 29 times. Mm. You throw in Wilkins had 7 carries. Nyheim Hines had 2. They ran it 38 times in that football game. If Arthur Smith, and they put the blueprint together that night, everybody was saying the next morning, that's how you beat the Chiefs. Time of possession, 37 to 22 minutes in favor of the Colts.
Thanks for telling us, Nick.
If Arthur Smith doesn't run it down Kansas City's throat, he should be escorted out of Nissan Stadium, barring, you know, the Chiefs all of a sudden start lightening it up and you have to bail on the run.
Oh, of course. I think that's the way you can try to beat a Kansas City Chiefs team, that you slow the game up, run the football, time of possession, keep the ball out of Patrick Mahomes' hand. But on the other side, you have to play defense against these guys. And the Titans now down, they are down a corner. Mm-hmm. And Malcolm Butler, he's been put on IR. I don't trust LeSean Sims. I don't trust no one on that secondary at this point in time to cover those four guys in Kansas City. They're going to have to get to Patrick Mahomes. They're going to have to get to him. They can't – Dean Pease has never been this way. Can't sit back and say we're going to play coverage. No, you got to try to get to him. And is the Tennessee Titans defensive front good enough to get to Patrick Mahomes, play in and play out? I don't know. But they're going to have to – when the ball is thrown, they're going to have to get the man on the ground. And if they don't get the man on the ground – it's going to be a track meet for the Tennessee Titans. They have nobody with foot speed, not even Jackson, that can cover Hill or the kid out of
Sammy Watkins.
No, not Sammy Watkins.
Mecole Hardman out of Georgia. They're all pretty fast.
These guys are just uber fast.
Kelsey's the fastest tight end probably in the league. Right?
You have so much speed on that field that can't play bump man to man. What do you do against a defense like that? Well, you keep the ball as an offense.
Yeah.
That's what you have to do.
It's funny. Like, I think about this matchup, and I almost just can't allow myself to worry about the defense against Patrick Mahomes. Like, you almost have to just ignore it. You have to say, all right, the only chance they have to win the game, the defense has to play great. So, like, you have to sort of just, like, eliminate that. Like, I know this sounds weird, but if Patrick Mahomes and that offense is scoring points, game's over. No chance. So, like, you almost have to just eliminate that part of the analysis. And just say, help us, Dean Pease, you're our only hope.
Yeah.
Like, you have to just sort of throw that half of the matchup out and just say, well, if you're not going to win at all on defense and the strength of your team is not going to be good, then you have no chance. If the defense is really good and it's as good a defense as we've seen so far in the NFL, even without Malcolm Butler, if they can, Harold Landry is starting to really come on and is having a really nice season. You know, if Jeffrey Simmons is getting more snaps and, you know, all these reasons, okay, just assume the defense plays well enough to keep the team in the game. Then you can start to have the conversation about how this team can win. But you got to just let that – you almost have to eliminate that part and just say, okay, now what can the offense do, assuming the defense is playing well?
Mm-hmm.
Because there's no chance they can win if the defense doesn't play well.
No.
There's no way they keep up. Now, if the defense is playing well, what does the offensive scheme and strategy look like? And, yeah, that's the blueprint. You have Derrick Henry. You have Deion Lewis. You have guards and center. You have a center question. You have two guards that are better run blockers than they are pass blockers. You've got – receivers that aren't getting open. You've got a backup quarterback playing. Like, run the football. Keep it away from the Chiefs and hope that you're in the game in the fourth quarter. They've shown us that they can win these games, but there's also a part of me that thinks the Chiefs are just going to win by 30.
Can we import Anthony Costanzo and Quentin Nelson for the week and Braden Smith and the rest of that group?
I love a good Braden.
Can we just take, I don't know.
He didn't play particularly well.
Can we take the 2000 Raven defense? Can we?
I mean, hell, while we're at it, can we get Aaron Rodgers and Vince Lombardi as well? Like, are they available?
And the Titans defense is good, but they have been exposed the last 2 weeks. And I think the fatigue of the season and the fatigue of them having to carry the team for, you know, seven games, I think it's starting to wear. You know, Jarrell Casey's injured, I believe. Malcolm Butler's out. Guys are just banged up. You got a young guy in Simmons that is going to have to play more snaps. You don't know what that's going to do to his knee. So this is a defense that you're starting to see chinks in the armor because they had to do so much so early.
What can Jarrell Casey give you?
Yeah, we don't. I mean, is he going to play?
Didn't play.
Yeah, he doesn't. So. Yeah. So now what?
Yep. And Malcolm Butler placed on IR. So there you have that. When we come back, we'll continue the NFL conversation. One team in the AFC South is getting healthier and better, you would presume. And one guy heads to IR, but is he headed to the Music City? We'll discuss that next on Morning Drive. It is Morning Drive, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tim Brando, excuse me, from Fox Sports will join us coming up at the top of the hour to talk some college football, Bama LSU, playoff rankings, all the big stories on Saturday. But two big stories in the NFL yesterday. First of all, Nick Foles back in the helm at Jacksonville, starting quarterback, and I guess the mustache era is over.
Are you guys surprised they went back to Nick Foles?
No. $88 million.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
He back.
So
until he gets hurt again.
I will say this. I'm fascinated to see what Nick Foles is as a starting quarterback outside of Philadelphia, whether it's good or bad. I'm not a huge believer of Nick Foles. I've said that for a long time, but I still would like to see what it looks like. Jacksonville went from, and this is what's interesting if you're a Titans fan or a fan of any NFL team with a quarterback question. You know, Gardner Minshew is under a six-year contract, a sixth-round draft pick contract, right? So he's very, very cheap for 4 years.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Nick Foles, who's expensive, but you got him under contract for 4 years. You got a pretty interesting and, you know, deep quarterback room now in Jacksonville. You may not have a guy, but you've got a nice room there after having a giant question mark at that position for a long time. So in one offseason, they acquired a guy and drafted a guy that they felt would make their team better. Now we'll see if it actually works. But it happened pretty quickly. If you're a Titans fan or a Bengals fan or any of these teams, you're looking at what the Jacksonville Jaguars did and you go, man, we found kind of a gem in the sixth round. Sure, we might have overpaid, but we found a starter that we could pay for. You know, the quarterback room in Jacksonville is far better today than it was this time last year.
Does anybody believe Foles will get Jacksonville back in the wild card conversation?
Man, I don't know. This team...
I don't see it.
It's hard based upon where they're at now in this division. I don't see how he could get them... I mean, there's a possibility. They're sitting at 4-5. They would have to, you know, run the table on everybody in the division in order for that to happen. So does he have a chance to do it? Yeah, but I only see one team coming out of the South. I don't see two teams coming out of the South right now. And it seems like Houston is sort of separating themselves from everyone else. If there is a second team, I think it will be Indianapolis.
Even without Brissett?
Unless this Brissett thing, you know, is you know, for the season of the, you know, for at least the next 5 or 6 games, then they have a problem with Hoyer at quarterback. I don't think he gives them the same thing that Jacoby Brissett did. So this could just be a one-man race at this point in time with Houston. You might have Indy that can stay up there. I'm not going to, you know, I'm not doubting Indy because we doubted, a lot of people doubted him when Andrew Luck decided to walk away, and look where they're at now. I'm not going to doubt them. It's going to be tougher, but I'm not going to doubt them.
So the other news of the day yesterday in the NFL, Cam Newton will be placed on the injured reserve list. And I saw something where if the Carolina Panthers would decide to part ways with him, they would save $19 of the $21 million that they would owe Cam Newton next year. Now, they already have Kyle Allen. They've drafted Will Greer. And we got a tweet this morning from Forged in Blue, who sent us all a tweet. He says, I'm watching First Things First on Fox Sports 1.
That's your first mistake.
That's your first mistake.
Exactly.
with Nick Wright and Chris Canty. And he said both agreed that Cam Newton would end up on the Titans. And they asked us if we would like that. Guys, I think Cam is shot.
What makes – see, this is what
– You're falling in love with a name.
This is what I say when – and we say this – and you never want to kind of broad brush, you know, national people. You just don't. But this is when you don't do your homework. You just look at a team that's struggling with a quarterback, and you say, oh, he would work better with that. Have they seen the Tennessee Titans offensive line? They haven't. That's an asinine comment to say that Cam Newton would be in Tennessee. No, John Robinson doesn't want – he's injury prone. Why do I want a guy that was put on IR
yesterday
to be my quarterback of the future? Yeah. No way, no how. I will stick with Tannehill if that's the case. Seriously.
Here's what I would say, and I'd lump Teddy Bridgewater in this, and I'd lump Marcus Mariota into this. I'll put Cam Newton into this conversation along with Ryan Tannehill. They have to have a quarterback. So we all think that drafting a quarterback is the right answer in some way, shape, or form, whether it's a first-rounder, a second-rounder this year or next year, meaning 2020 or 2021, whatever. We know that they're going to have to address it with a young player who's going to be the guy of the future at some point. But in the meantime, you have to have a starting quarterback. If you told me I could have Cam Newton, Ryan Tannehill, Marcus Mariota, or Teddy Bridgewater at a Jacoby Brissett cost, you know, 2 years, $30 million, $15 million per year, which just doesn't exist anymore in the NFL. It's just not the going rate, but if you can get me a Jacoby Brissett contract for one of those four guys, I'd take any of them. I'm fine with any of them because somebody has to play quarterback while you're searching and finding your real quarterback. So like I don't know if any of those guys. I don't think Bridgewater or Cam Newton would take that kind of money.
Right.
I think Tannehill might. I think if I'm Marcus, I'd much rather go get that money somewhere else. I need to try my hand or my head somewhere else in a different organization because this organization is just not. It's just not there with him. And Marcus needs a new start. But, again, I think any of those guys can do the job of holding the fort down for 2 years while you find the guy. I just think if you're expecting Cam Newton to come in and be the answer, then I think you're just sorely mistaken on that.
I know ultimately money talks, but if you're Cam Newton and you – excuse me – if you value your health, why – as much of abuse as he has taken physically, a lot of it's self-inflicted because you know, he runs like a fullback.
Yeah. Why not go to the Colts?
Why would you come here?
Like, if I'm Cam, I'd go to the Colts.
I mean, that's like a death sentence to come to Tennessee. I mean, I know we don't have state income tax, but you really want Big Raj protecting your blind side?
Here's the deal. Cam was a phenomenal player. He was this, you know.
He was a league MVP.
He was a transformer.
That's basically what he was.
He was a transformer.
He can do it all.
He was Megatron.
Well, those days are behind him. Not to say that he's now just a bad quarterback, but those days, those things that made him great, he can't no longer do because of injury.
Mm-hmm.
It caught up with him.
It's caught up with him. Yep. This is a guy that is not even above 60% completion completion rate.
That was a remix.
Yeah, exactly. remix. He's at 59%. A guy with a injury history. I am not, if I'm John Robinson, why would I do that? I'm sticking with Tannehill. If that's the case, I'm just re-signing Tannehill.
I'd agree.
And at least if I'm keeping Arthur Smith, at least Tannehill, the guys know him. The guys feel comfortable with him. They understand him. He understands the offense. He understands what we want out of him. I am going to sign him to a bridge deal. Draft a quarterback, sign him to. I'm not going to bring in a guy that just got off of IR that's a below 60% passer. I'm not doing that.
Because
he's not giving me what he used to give Carolina.
If we're talking bridge deals for the Titans, I would rank him in this order of the four we mentioned. Assuming all things are equal, money and all that. I go Bridgewater 1, Tannehill 2, Mariota 3, Cam Newton 4.
Yeah.
Wow. That would be my four.
I wouldn't argue with that. I wouldn't argue with that at all.
I like Tannehill's physical traits better than Bridgewater, but Teddy Bridgewater just finds a way to manage.
Bridgewater's a smart player.
Yeah.
Man. He's a smart player. He's much more of a game manager, does not have the arm. That's the thing, is he's got the same kind of arm that Marcus has. Like, it's not – he's not going to be making the deep out route throws, you know? Like, that's – but he's a winner, and he just figures out how to win games. And I just – the problem is that Bridgewater's going to be looking at 22 – like a Nick Foles-like contract is what he's going to be looking for. Although I think there's a chance he resigns with the Saints as a backup for, like, one more year. Cam, I would expect, is asking for a lot of money. We don't know what Ryan Tannehill wants financially. Mm-hmm. His last contract was huge. So, now it didn't work out, but what is he asking for? Is he okay with a Jacoby Brissett deal? Two years, $15 million per. That's the Brissett deal. If you can give me one of those guys at the Brissett cost, then I think any of them work. But you might as well just stick with the guy who's here at that point with Tannehill and just say, hey, you're a placeholder, dude. We know what you are.
Mm-hmm.
You're not the future, but we like you enough to keep you around. We're going to go draft a quarterback. You're going to help us groom him, and then he's going to take over in a year, year and a half, 2 years, whatever it may be.
From Teddy B to Timmy B, we'll talk with Tim Brando coming up next. All things college football playoff, and, of course, the big one on Saturday in Tuscaloosa, Alabama-LSU. Tim Brando knows that rivalry very, very well. Back after this on Morning Drive.
Forget everything you had planned for this weekend because you are sitting on your couch and winning from the comfort of your own home. I'm here with SpinQuest, where you can play hundreds of slot games, all of the table games you love, and you could even win real cash prizes. New users, $30 coin packs are on sale for $10 at SpinQuest.com.
SpinQuest is a free-to-play social casino. Void where prohibited. Visit SpinQuest.com for more details.